honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our tribute to the one and only Colonel Robert Thacker, or simply the Colonel, as they knew him in San Clemente, California, where he spent the final 50 of his 102 years on our planet. If you visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, I have links for you to obituary articles from the New York Times as well as the San Clemente Times. He spent 31 years in the Air Force. In World War II alone, he earned the Silver Star twice, the Distinguished Flying Cross three times, the French gave him their Croix de Guerre. He would go on to fly B-29s during the Korean War, and the reconnaissance missions he flew in Vietnam are still classified. But if you ever had the privilege of spending any time with Robert Thacker, one thing you never heard was any fear, or really any concern that what he was doing might cost him his life.
I can tell you right now, there was no question in my mind that they weren't going to get me.
And that's not just bravado. You really felt that then, it seems like.
Absolutely. Most people do. In fact, I don't know of anyone that in my military career, particularly during the difficulties, that thought they weren't going to make it. Most of my people were forward-looking troops as far as I was concerned. And certainly they weren't going to get me, period.
Here you had been there the day the war started for America. You had seen firsthand in very shocking fashion what had happened that day. To reach the end of the war and to realize that both of these enemies had been defeated, was that satisfying for you? What did you take from that?
I was just thankful that I could just sit down and there was no more killing going on. I just had this tremendous relief of satisfaction that no more killings and we can live in peace at least for a few years. I didn't have a drink. I mean, I was with my sweetheart, and I had just been assigned to the flight test division at Wright Field, which is a plum position, because I knew we were having all of this new equipment coming off the line that had to be tested, and I was going to be a part of the flight test division at Material Command. And then I took off from there. But it was the relief in of the attention that I felt. I didn't get out on the streets. I didn't do anything. I just sat down.
And I know this sounds crazy for a guy who flew so many missions in the war where there was flak coming at you and enemy fighters trying to shoot you down, circling around you like sharks in the water. But I think some people might say it takes even more guts and chutzpah to be a test pilot than it does to fly in a war. How did your wife feel about the fact that you were going to be a test pilot?
Well, there were some incidents. Chuck Yeager and I were in the same test pilot academy at Wright Field. And after we got out of that, it was our first operational jet fighter, the P-80 Lockheed Shooting Star. Milo Burcham, their chief test pilot, had been killed. And Dick Bong had also been killed in the airplane. And my boss called me in and said, Thacker, I want you to take Chuck Yeager and two other pilots, go out to Lockheed, pick up five P-80s. It just killed our top ace, and then the chief test pilot had been killed in the damn thing. And I want you to fly $500 with no accidents. So we went up to Lockheed, went out on the dry lakes. In those days, it was dry lakes was the dry lakes, and that was all there was. It was tough living conditions. So we flew the 500 hours, and I briefed my people. I said, I want you to fly safely and always stay within glide distance if you flame out of one of the dry lakes. And the second day we were flying, who do you think I caught reporting to San Francisco Air Traffic Control? Yeager. But nevertheless, that the problem with the P-80 is they had a fuel pump that was failing them, so they put an emergency fuel pump on them, and you used it for takeoff. Even in those days, you have to use a checklist. Dick Bong did not turn his emergency fuel pump on for takeoff. The main fuel pump failed. Unfortunately, Dick landed in a rock quarry. But when my boss called me and he said, you're next, So, you know,
I don't think I'd feel very good about my prospects if Dick Bong, the leading P-38 ace in the Pacific and their top test pilot.
Dick was a great guy, and he was a go-getter. 40% of all the shoot-downs in World War II by fighter people was performed by only 6% of the pilots. Chuck Yeager got 13, so Chuck is no slouch. Not every fighter pilot is a hero, is what I'm trying to explain. Or a bomber pilot either. But to be a high-scoring ace, you are exceptional. My hat is off to him.
Well, and they sure took on a lot of risk in getting all those kills.
That's what I say. I mean, you did not have to expose yourself as a fighter pilot. The high-scoring aces went after them and did the job, and my hat is off to them.
Getting back to the P-80s, so they say, oh, these two guys are dead, you're next. I mean, I don't think that makes you feel very good about your chances here.
No, but you're men, and that's the business you're in, and that's what you've chose to do, and go do the job. Really, in those days, you did what you were told. Today, you get a lot of back talk, I guess. People ask me, how come this Betty Jo thing that you flew from Honolulu to New York, how did that happen? And I said, I was told to do it.
It wasn't your idea.
It wasn't my idea. In fact, I assigned a first lieutenant and a captain to the job. I had a lot of time in it in right field doing some experimental work with it.
Let's tell everybody what this is.
The P-82 Twin Mustang, same profile as a single fuselage P-51, but actually it was a completely different airplane, much larger in all aspects, and it was a very good airplane. The reason that nobody wanted any part of it and the job was put off to me was it was prop driven, and everybody wanted to fly the P-80, the jet. So my job was not in the fighter section. My job was accelerated service, and I've been doing most of the work with the Twin Mustang. My boss called me in and said, no, Thacker, you do this. So they wanted me to fly from Tokyo to New York, and I said, I don't think so. It might go from Hawaii to New York nonstop, which it did, but I had to wait 3 weeks for a 20-knot tailwind. So I had to wait for a little bit of help, but we got to New York with enough fuel to my alternate, which was Boston, which was 63 gallons. So that was a good flight. It just happened to make the flight for a no news day, so I was the news for that day. So we made every front page in the country. Hawaii to New York nonstop with a fighter, 14 and a half hours. This was in February 1947.
Yeah, it must have been a slow news day in 1927, too, when Lindbergh went across the Atlantic. Did that mean something to you, having grown up idolizing Lindbergh, that here you had a feat that in some ways was a lot like what he did?
No, you're much too kind to me. Lindbergh was really a genius. The Spirit of St. Louis had a fuel tank right in front of it for weight and balance problems. And he had a periscope that he looked out the side of the airplane to land it and take off. And he was also alone, was not carrying a lot of excess baggage. So Lindbergh was one of my idols. As a politician, not so good. But as an aviation enthusiast, he was a genius.
So when you made it to New York, and as you describe, a slow news day, I don't think anyone else would put it that way, but you get all this attention, it's in the papers. How special was it for you to be able to tell the story of how that plane got its name?
I was amazed at the you know, you just do what you're supposed to do, and that's the end of that, but they wanted to know what North American, Los Angeles area, who built the airplane. And I said, Betty Jo. I've always wanted them, because I never really had an airplane, because I was always in the lead later on in my career. And so they put Betty Jo on the side, and there we are. And she waited in New York for me for 3 weeks. And kind of a cute story. One of the managers of big hotels in New York said, where's Betty Jo staying in New York? I was waiting for a tailwind in Hawaii. And so he called Betty Jo and said, you come and blah, 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 stay at my hotel. So she went over, and they put her in the honeymoon suite on the top. And she went down the next morning and said, I'm just a lieutenant colonel's wife, and I can't afford this kind of accommodations. And the clerk said, Mrs. Thacker, you are guest of the hotel for the remaining time. So she had a marvelous 3 weeks in Hawaii, in New York City, as guest of the Hamilton Hotel. So that's kind of a cute story. I can't afford this. I'm only a lieutenant colonel's wife. And she couldn't, of course.
That's great. And that, besides being on a beautiful blanket that adorns your couch here in your home in San Clemente.
I signed some autographs for a friend a couple of years ago. And here came this beautiful hanging of the Betty Jo. And I said, honey, what are we going to do with this thing? So I just put it there on our divan, which I didn't think she'd allow it in the living room. Because you don't see the airplanes around, do you? And she liked it, so I just leave it there.
Well, it's got her name on it. How could she argue? And that plane, the twin Mustang P-82, is in the Air Force Museum in Ohio. What does that mean to you to be able to go there if you wish, or to have other people stop by there and look at something that was a part of history and your history?
Well, it's kind of fun to have people come up, and they're so nice to me. And they say, we were Dayton, Ohio the other day, and we saw the Betty Jo in the museum, and it was just great fun. And that makes you feel good. You can't help it, you know. And the Betty Jo will be there forever.
And from there, you went into the jets, as you talked about. Can you give us a sense for what that was like for you to go from propeller-driven planes your whole life to flying these things with really unbridled power? How that felt and how you experienced that?
Well, actually, I've got two Rolls engines.
You mean in the P-82?
P-82. And in the P-80, the first operational jet fighter only had about 2,300 pounds of thrust. The P-82 that I was flying would really, with Rolls engines, would run away from a P-80 because the Whittle engine that we had in the first operational jets was very low powered. Turbine thrust and reaction is much different than a prop. When you push the throttle on a prop, it goes. With a turbine engine, it takes a little few seconds to get this thing going. So you had to watch what you were doing, and our accident rate initially with the P-80 was terrible because they were being flown by ex-hot dog aces, and they were violating the aircraft. The P-80, when it first came out, accident rate was 10 times the normal accident rate. And it was nothing but violating the weapon system.
So you were one of the people that flew it right and helped show the way for all the pilots that we have today flying F-15s. And I know you're saying, well, but don't you feel like that you did something for all those pilots we have out there today flying jets, that the work you did had some value for what they're experiencing now?
Yes, I'm receiving the pleasures of your company and your attention. And so, of course, that makes me pleasant, makes me feel good. Let's face it.
Without you and those other pilots doing that, I mean, if people had said, you know what, this is too dangerous, we're not going to, you know, it's killing our best pilots, we're not going to keep up with this, then we wouldn't have what we had today. So what you guys did, the courage you showed and the persistence, don't you think has paid off in a pretty big way?
Oh, yes, of course, but that's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're paid for. And it was very exciting. It was very exciting. I just had a ball in the Air Force. Flying has been my interest, and it still is my interest. And that just makes life so pleasant.
Robert Thacker was inducted into the Academy of Model Aeronautics Hall of Fame in 2010, and he kept building model planes and competing in model aircraft competitions, even with some turbine-powered models that could approach 200 miles an hour until he was almost 100. When what would have been his 103rd birthday arrives next month in San Clemente, his daughter and some of his friends will gather at the pier there, extending into that Pacific Ocean he flew so many hours over, the ocean his ashes have been spread over, and there will be a flyover, one final tribute to a pioneering pilot whose exploits will surely be remembered, but so too will be his unique spirit that propelled all those accomplishments. The man who once flew 5,051 miles from Honolulu to New York in 14 hours and 33 minutes, setting a record for the longest and fastest flight by a propeller-driven airplane, lived the kind of life that paralleled that historic mission. Whatever fuel he relied on allowed him to not only live long, but live full throttle. Something still evident the last time I had the privilege of talking to him on the phone.
Ever since my yo-yo champion of Southern California in 1932, I've been a lucky guy. I'm proud of a couple of things. Number one, I'm proud of my family. I'm proud of my good luck. And I got in on day one when the shooting started at Pearl Harbor. I lucked through that. I flew a complete tour in the Japanese area. And then I turned around and went to Europe, where the big war was really on. And I flew a complete tour against the German Empire. And the missions were, when I started flying in Europe, was about 20 missions, and you were either dead or shot down in B-17s. And I flew 33 missions. I led 33 missions and survived a return to the States. Now, I'm the only one that I can think of, I'm not saying I am now, I'm saying that I am aware of. There may flew in both theaters, but there's very few completed a complete tour in both theaters. So Paul, that's the whole thing. But you know what people are interested in? When they meet me, they say, Colonel, are you a guy that won the Southern California Yo-Yo Champion in 1932. They're not interested in my missions or what happened. They want to pull my leg. So, Paul, that's it. I had a great time. I'm having a great time. And thank you for your interest.
Colonel Robert Thacker, memorable in so many ways. I can only imagine the lively conversations he and his old cohort, Chuck Yeager, might be having right about now. But one thing I'm very thankful for is that one of his fellow model aircraft enthusiasts named Chris George told me about Colonel Thacker years ago. He said, you have to meet this guy, and boy, was he right. So thank you, Chris, and thank all of you for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.